You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, bring the meeting back to order.
Yep.
I knew that. Can you let her gavel the meeting in?
Tough bunch.
Yeah, really. So what we wanted to do is with the county administrator, county attorneys and staff, go through the implications of the recently authorized or enacted Senate Bill 23. We made a presentation to county council about this, and if you listen to it, this is going to sound similar, but because at least the immediate implications of it are something that you all are going to have to deal with. We wanted to go through it with you and explain sort of a little bit how we got here, our issues with it, and what we need to work through going forward. So if you listen to the county council presentation, I admit it's going to be a little bit redundant, but again, we thought it would be good to have it here so that you all can make sure you understand and ask any questions. So with that, a little bit of background on it. Again, same presentation. The primary sponsor was Senator Russ Huxtable, and the other Sussex County co-sponsor was Representative Ilona Berry. It was introduced on April 21st. There was a Senate Substitute 1 that was introduced May 11th, and a Substitute 2 introduced on June 8th, and it was signed into law on July 13th. You may remember that was right before we pulled a couple of subdivision applications off our Planning and Zoning Commission agenda. I want to state, Sussex County opposed the bill the whole way through. We had meetings with Senator Huxtable and his staff outlining our concerns about it. We provided at least two white papers commenting on it and explaining our concerns. And I would say our concerns were also not just that we object to it. Our concerns were this has issues with it in terms of implementation. There's things in here that just don't work. You know, unfortunately, those things were not taken into consideration. The legislation was not changed to reflect any of our concerns. And here we are today having to work through this with something that, frankly, you know, again, whether you deal with the policy behind it, it leaves a lot of questions and a lot of things that aren't clear how we're going to resolve that we're going to have to figure out. I will say, interestingly, Mr. Lawson stated this, I believe, at County Council. The Delaware Association of County and the Delaware League of Local Governments opposed the bill, as well as all three counties, and to the extent that any towns took a position, they all opposed to it. We're not aware of any situation where there was sort of that, you know, across the board opposition to something that directly affects all these jurisdictions, and it still got adopted, you know, regardless. So the legislative language, and I'm focusing on the by right residential uses, which is subdivisions, because there's other parts of this SB 23 that will affect how we do our comprehensive plan. But since that's down the road, I'm not even going to talk about that today, because there's just issues with that. So for the purposes of the legislation, by right means a use identified as a permitted use within a zoning district under a local zoning ordinance that complies with all applicable objective standards and requirements and does not require rezoning, conditional use permit, special exception, or variance. So by default, that's subdivisions. Objective standards meet standards that are measurable, uniformly applicable, and not subject to discretionary personal judgment. Some examples of that would be things like our perimeter buffers, you know, where there's a quantifiable, measurable distance, you know, with the buffer requirements, resource buffers. We're working on forest preservation, you know, that sort of thing. Anything that's, you know, I would say quantifiable. By right residential uses, that is a residential development application for a use that is permitted by right under the zoning ordinance. Of a local jurisdiction shall be reviewed through an administrative review and approval process. So again, that pulls the public hearings out of this process. It says nothing in this section prohibits a local jurisdiction from requiring review or approval by a planning commission, planning board, or other administrative body, provided the review is limited to determining compliance with applicable objective standards. The next one is what's important and kind of why we pulled those subdivisions off and why we have to figure this out. It says in subpart D, a local jurisdiction may hold a public meeting for a residential development application described above in the section. Any ordinances or regulations adopted to govern a public meeting held under this subsection must provide for a public meeting that meets all the following criteria, does not constitute and is not conducted as a public hearing, is limited to determining compliance with applicable objective standards and requirements, and may allow for public comment provided all such comment is made only through written submission. So that means that, in effect, we're going to have a room full of folks, because it's on an agenda, because we have to advertise it somehow. And as I said to council, that puts the chair or me or Mr. Whitehouse in the position of having to say, thanks for coming. We can't hear from you. You can't say anything. You know, and that's the unfortunate part of that, and I think the public's not going to understand that.
Yeah, by public meeting, do they mean like a fire hall meeting or something like that?
So we've heard all kinds of different explanations of that. My interpretation of it would be that now subdivisions are relegated to what we did like today on other business. You know, it's a site plan. It shows up on other business, and we consider it, but we don't take any testimony. As we'll get to in a moment, that means not only do we not hear from the public, we don't hear from the applicant, the engineer, anybody, because testimony is testimony. A public hearing is a public hearing. That means nobody talks, you know? You can't have it both ways. You can't say, all right, developer, you can give your presentation. Public, you can't speak at all. It's all or nothing, and in this case, it's nothing.
Do their written comments, but the attorney.
They would, it's all in writing.
How's that work?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, Mr. Lawson brought up an interesting point, which is not in here. You know, the state legislature recently changed, the Freedom of Information Act so that we have to have public comment at every meeting, and that's every meeting statewide. We just did it. And this runs completely afoul of that because we have the one thing that affects people, and we're saying that they can't make any public comment on it.
So you know how that's going to end up.
I know exactly how it's going to end up, and it's not going to be a good ending.
Why was this bill brought on in the first place?
So it's a good question. It's the cover sheet said, the Housing for Every Delawarean Act, and it was designed to promote affordable housing. And as we said to Senator Huxtable in our meeting, and we've said all along, it's not for every Delawarean, because people buying these houses are from out of state. I mean, the majority of them. So that's not solving that problem. And by making subdivisions by right, all we do is make marketable market rate subdivisions much easier to obtain that does nothing for affordable housing. And frankly, pulls the rug out from under our SCRP program and some other examples that we're going to go through.
I look forward to a single developer showing up with a single affordable unit in the next 2 years because of this.
Right. Well, it's through this level, so I can talk about it. Cool Springs is a good example. You know, there's affordable housing, an SCRP component in that. It's a mixed-use development, but it's had to go through two public hearings that have been very controversial. That would be an example of a developer saying, why in the world would I put myself through the uncertainty of two public hearings? I'm going to do a straight subdivision, all market rate, all single-family homes, sprawl, get it approved instead of essentially a master plan development that has mixed use, retail, educational, affordable housing, missing middle housing,
transportation.
Yeah, all that stuff. Yeah. You know, there's just no incentive to ever pursue that because why would you? If you don't need to have a public hearing, you can come in and get Mr. Whitehouse to stamp an approval on a subdivision.
So, was it asked about, you know, like the, if they just made it by right where they didn't have any public hearings across the board, why wouldn't they have just said we would allow that to happen for, and you probably don't know this answer, but why wouldn't they just say workforce housing or affordable housing? Why wouldn't that be the only ones? It's like, okay, let's give you this as an incentive, one little thing, and X.
Well, I think, I can't speak for the drafters of this, but.
Home Builders Association.
Well, yeah, I mean, there was some involvement of home builders and developers, which is fine. I will say the point the county tried to make is engage with us from the beginning. You know, it wasn't until after this was introduced up in Dover that we heard about it through another legislator, reached out and said, what's going on? You know, there wasn't any engagement with Sussex County beforehand. How can we make this work? Because Sussex County, as we've talked about in our comp plan, we're looking at attacking and having more mixed use, more missing middle, and much more affordable housing. I mean, we're going to do that. There's going to be increased density and things like that in our comp plan.
How does this affect the comp plan now, though?
Well, the other part of SB 23 is it makes the future land use map essentially a zoning map. So we're going to have to, you know, let me, I don't want to get too far in the weeds with that, but for those of you who haven't been through a comp plan, the future land use map is forward-looking. You know, it's supposed to be how the county's going to be built out over 30 or 40 years, you know. And you're directing development trends. What SB 23 does is say that you have to determine the zoning for every parcel of land in Sussex County, and that if an applicant comes in and wants to rezone their property to what your future land use map says within a relatively short period of time, you have to approve that without a public hearing.
That applies to all zoning types, right?
All zoning types.
Which would definitely mean a certain development on 24 that is still under litigation.
I don't want to say that because, well, one thing, it's under litigation, but this is, our future land use map is going to be different coming up, you know, because that one's governed by our current comprehensive plan, which said any number of different zoning classifications are appropriate. The way SB 23 works is it says you have to do the zoning this way, and once you do it that way, it's by right zoning. So what it does is take a forward-looking map that talks about trends and makes it a zoning map with possible zoning occurring immediately.
Which gives us no discretion on the timing of those zoning changes.
That's exactly right. I mean, theoretically, they could all come in, you know, the day after that future land use map's amended. I mean, we're getting, because that's the next step. I will say the problem with that is now we have to have much more engagement with DLDOT, with all the utilities to make sure that the roads can handle whatever zoning we're going to apply, you know, to the future land use map, that there's sewer and water infrastructure available, schools are available, you know, capacity, kind of the things we've been talking about. We need to drill down on that in detail on our comp plan because we have to live with that zoning as a result of that future land use map based on SB 23 versus the way it is now where we say, okay, this is a planning tool. It takes it from a planning tool to an instant zoning map is what it does, you know, and eliminates that discretion. And because there's an elimination of discretion, we've got to get it right in the comp plan drafting. I mean, it really turns it on its head with regard to the comp plan. So I don't even know how we got on this, but it really, again, back to the subdivision part of it, it eliminates the incentive to do any affordable housing, you know, subdivisions anywhere, affordable housing development in Sussex County because it streamlines the process for subdivisions. Continuing, by right residential uses section E. This subsection or this section supersedes any inconsistent public hearing requirements. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but are in state code because all of our public hearing requirements for subdivisions are spelled out in state code. This supersedes them all and says, well, you're just not doing public hearings anymore. So, this is just a review of the specific terms. The by right residential means any major subdivision. Objective standards, we need to develop those as well as the process by which the county reviews and approves these standards. We need to develop the public meeting framework because, again, it's not the same as a public hearing. We got to figure out what the notice requirements will mean because right now there's legal ads, there's mailings, the signs are, you know, posted on the properties, postcards are sent out. Again, there's no public testimony. We don't even know what the public record would be if there's no public testimony. It'd be the written comments and whatever submitted, I guess. But we need to draft amendments to Chapter 99 and a little bit in Chapter 115 because our code is also not consistent with these requirements of SB 23, which is why we had pulled those subdivisions off and why we're not considering any more subdivisions. Because if we had a hearing, the developer would say, well, you're having a hearing inconsistent with SB 23, you know, and so we've got to develop our code practice and procedures to be consistent with SB 23. One of the things we stress, too, is the county has a real concern about the transparency of all this. As we know from public hearings that we have on subdivisions, oftentimes, whether it's from anybody participating, there's misinformation or misunderstanding of the information, and through the public hearing process, a lot of times we can educate people on what's correct or, you know, verify that information's correct or whatever. That's eliminated now, that opportunity to do that. We can also ask questions of the public or, you know, the opposition if that's organized or the applicant and its representatives and consultants. We can't do that anymore because we can't take any public testimony during the proceedings. So, again, there's a real concern on the county staff at administration level and at county council that it eliminates transparency in the subdivision process.
So an already agitated population of citizens who are concerned about growth being out of control and no little d democratic input into those processes has had what little democratic input they could have had taken away from them. Okay, yeah, it's exciting.
Well, and you know, and as a practical matter, on larger subdivision applications we've had, or any land use applications, we've invited DLDOT to come and participate in the hearing. And that's to make sure that we have solid information, but also so that if we have a room full of people, mm-hmm. they can hear from DLDOT what DLDOT's plans are for those roadway improvements. Kind of, Mr. Collins, to your point, it's sort of an educational component, you know, and that's all gone now as well, because there won't be an opportunity to do that because we don't have public hearings anymore. So sort of a checklist of what we need to do. Going forward, we have to determine how information is gathered and considered and by whom, and also by at what point in this process, you know, because there's an application filed. When do we send out notice to the public to submit written comments? When is that considered? How is it considered and who considers it? We have to figure out what is the decision and who makes it, whether that's you all, whether that's staff, because it talks about in SB 23 that it can be an administrative decision made by staff. Congratulations, Mr. Whitehouse. You know, we have to figure out what the basis for the decision is, and if there's no public hearing, you know, what's the record that you're making a decision based on? Again, we have to figure out the notice requirement and how we inform the public about any of this. And also, I would say when as well, you know, so that if we're going to only take written comment, when we do that and how we do it. Another one we have to decide is, how do we manage the current appeal process? We have to change that up because, as you all know, if somebody's not satisfied with a subdivision, their initial appeal is to Sussex County Council. Does that still happen? And what's council making their decision on? And there's another layer of this. If it's an administrative decision, state code says that appeal goes to the Board of Adjustment, which, you know, they don't see subdivisions now either. So we've got to clarify that in our code, and it's not spelled out in SB 23. This is a real one too. How do we deal with additional lots or additional density or other substantial changes to an approved subdivision? You know, this currently requires a public hearing that the existing homeowners get notice of. There was one that I'll jump to, Anchors Run, that we heard. I don't know if you were all on it at that point. It was a 91 unit expansion of an existing subdivision. You know, all the residents were notified, so we heard about impacts on the HOA and the roads. About the location of amenities and pickleball, and that was adjusted because of the public testimony. And, you know, frankly, the folks had an opportunity to speak in the existing part of the subdivision because they had purchased their lots based on the assumption this is what their development's going to be. Under SB 23, that's gone. There's no more public hearing in that situation where there's an expansion of a subdivision. We have the bonus density program, which I don't know that all of you have seen, but a developer has an opportunity to obtain lots over and above 2 units an acre in a subdivision, and if it's approved, then the money, there's a bonus density fee that goes to the Sussex County Land Trust. We have to figure out how that's going to be handled, because right now that's tied to the public hearing, and without a public hearing, we don't know how to accommodate that. We have some examples of this, but as you all well know, things don't show up in submissions all the time. You know, we hear about adjacent farming operations or hunting operations. We've actually heard about airports in the past, even next to Eagles Crest is one, that aren't otherwise known, that comes out in the public hearing that's lost as a result. And if that's not heard or learned about, then we have, you know, a deficient subdivision plan that we might be approving, you know. And so those are, you know, just, yeah.
We get a ton of information from opposition on public hearing.
Yeah, and it's not just that this should be denied. It's oftentimes, you know, this is information you should know about, so you take it.
Add a condition to it because of what.
Right.
Yes.
So what happens to the written comments? I mean, what value are they at all?
That's what we have to.
With them anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Why even allow that part?
And the thing is, with the written comments, some of these, and we have a few examples. This isn't a super long presentation. We have some examples in here that we gave to County Council. The other problem is that those written comments are valid, but they're not tied to objective standards, which is what SB 23 said. So, like, I don't even know that we could condition things based on hunting activities next door or an airport next door, because that's not an objective standard that's in our code anywhere. It's an obvious concern.
And it's not necessarily from an official source either.
Right.
I know there have been things.
Well, you can bank on it if those hunters are telling you they're.
But there have been things in here before, like a public hearing where the presenter put something out. Somebody may have been here in opposition, mm-hmm. and there was something they didn't even think about.
Right.
But because they thought about it and were able to say it, it was like, oh, that's.
No, and we have a couple of examples that we gave to council, which I'm going to run through because they weren't necessarily aware of them because they all happened at this level. This was one that was sort of more, just rhetorical, I guess, and for council's benefit. But these were just some recent subdivisions that we had. And I'm not going to go through each one of them. There's four of them there. But that's 3,000 lots just from those four subdivisions, which would not have had a public hearing at all. We said to council, this has the potential to supercharge sprawl throughout Sussex County because there's no gateway anymore. You don't have to go through a public hearing, to see whether you're going to get it. And again, as I mentioned before, there's no incentive anymore to participate in SCRP or create any affordable or missing middle housing. So it's really, North Star is another example. Like, they had 94 affordable housing units as part of that development. With this, North Star would have just come in with a subdivision probably. I mean, why would they have bothered with the 94 affordable housing units when they could get, market rate single family homes in that spot?
Talking about sprawl too, so maybe I missed this when you were speaking earlier about the public utility. So there's no provision in this House Bill 23 that says there has to be public utilities available.
No, and that's something that, both in the comp plan part of it and this, doesn't take into account, public utilities, how we gather information about the roads and what we do with that, schools, any of that, EMS. I don't even know what stage of the process we would consider that information because there's not a public hearing. So just some examples, and I'll go through these quickly because you all lived through it. One was North Star. It was 758 lots. Based on the public hearing, the open space was redesigned. There was a conservation easement that was proffered and established. Obviously there was the Mulberry Knoll Road extension that was a big part of that. We went through a lot of conversation and effort to make sure that the roadway improvements were phased as part of that development so that it occurred in a time frame that matched the roadway improvements. Again, I don't know how we do that now without a public hearing. This is a minor thing maybe to some, but important to others. There was testimony from the adjacent properties, the Horse Farm and the Elks Lodge, about things to do to protect their property. And those are the, like we talked about, these are the kinds of things you learn in a public hearing that you might not otherwise know about, or that, in fairness to a developer, they wouldn't necessarily have known about or considered either. Scenic Manor was another one. This is an older one, but it straddled Route 24. There was 22 lots, as I recall. It was 319 lots total, but 22 lots were on the opposite side. Whoops. Excuse me.
Just have to go back one.
Did I skip one? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there we go. Scenic Manor. Yeah. There was 22 lots on the south side of the development. This is Mulberry Knoll Road. I'm jumping ahead to another one. So this is Scenic Manor, and it did have lots on the south side of Mulberry Knoll Road. And there were concerns stated during the public hearing about folks having to cross that road, where the amenities were going to be, et cetera, et cetera. And there was coordination and participation with DelDOT regarding the safe crossing of that road. And that all came out of the public hearing, which would be lost in this one. Yeah. Keystone Bay, this is actually one that we just had this afternoon under other business for the amenities plan. Again, a minor thing to some, but important to others. There are lots that had their access way running through this subdivision because they were on the outside of it and the road went through. But there was concern about how they would gain or continue to have access to their property, where the mailboxes would be, and that sort of thing. That was all taken into account during the public hearing. Chase Oaks, this is the one I was thinking about, similar to Scenic Manor. Robinsonville Road, there was 22 lots on the opposite side of Robinsonville Road. Again, concerns about how those folks and kids and families would cross busy Robinsonville Road. Ended up that the commission relocated those lots, required them to be on the other side of Robinsonville Road because of that testimony, and ultimately that acreage was donated to the Sussex County Land Trust. But that all came out through the public hearing, along with a cemetery on that site that was protected with conditions. This one, some of y'all may remember, Walden 3. There was a concern about how these lots would tie into the amenities of the existing Walden 2 and 1 development, and concerns were expressed about that. And so phasing was implemented to make sure that that all happened accordingly to protect the existing property owners, again, which would be lost because we wouldn't have a public hearing. Wilson's Landing was a real recent one, which is a good example of why it's important to have a public hearing. This is the one where the applicant didn't realize there's a cemetery behind the woods line on the property. And in a collaborative effort, the people who were not so much in opposition but brought forth the fact that there's a cemetery did that during the public hearing. We held the record open, as I recall, or dealt with it so that the applicant and its engineers could verify where that subdivision or the cemetery was and come back in with a revised site plan. All that came out during the public hearing, again, which
what's going to happen with these cemeteries?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know?
Little top of them.
This one is kind of, I would say, you know, a really good example. Stillwater Harbor, that was the one out in Oak Orchard. That was really, you know, a controversial subdivision. And that public hearing was really important because it was denied ultimately and affirmed in court based upon information developed during the public hearing. Public testimony revealed substantial flooding concerns on River Road and the frequent closure of that road, meaning future residents would be trapped and EMS would not have access to them. The Indian River Volunteer Fire Company publicly objected to the project as a result of that. And I don't think everybody's on here, but to get around that, the developer proposed using an alternate entrance to the rear of it that was on an easement. During the public hearing, the property owners who had rights to use that easement objected to it, saying that their easement didn't allow that. It wasn't designed to handle all the roadway traffic that would occur as a result of that, or constructed properly for that, or heavy EMS or fire equipment.
And the school system came out stating they couldn't even get the buses to get.
Yeah, there was testimony. Right.
Families had to go to the school. It was a mess.
Right. There was literally testimony during the public hearing, and this was part of the decision for denial, that the school district actually did calls to neighbors or to families in that area saying, it's flooded so bad, we can't get your kids home from school. You got to pick them up at the fire company. It was literally like an automated call that had happened enough that you know, was pre-programmed, or to pick them up, you know, so you had to get your kids to the fire company. But all that came out in the public hearing, which, as I said, is, you know, lost at this point under SB 23. So next steps, what we need to do is begin to develop a framework for the required changes, present initial ideas at a future council meeting, and also with you all to figure out how we're going to implement this. Once we've figured out, we've got to draft the ordinances to change the code. Time frame wise, just so everybody's clear, this is not a simple operation. This is going to take months to do. And it requires public hearings, both at planning and zoning and county council, to make a code change. And while this is going on, because we don't have a process, all residential subdivisions, major subdivisions, are on hold. I mean, there's just no other way around it, unfortunately.
So this is here to stay?
Well, we're hoping that. I will say there's a concern that the legislators, who voted for this, didn't understand what they were voting for. There was a lot of controversy. A lot of people were saying, well, this doesn't take effect immediately. And you know, every attorney that looked at it said, well, read the words, because it takes effect today when it was enacted, as far as no more public hearings on subdivisions. So, I mean, that's pretty clear. And we've heard a lot of, I didn't know that, or I didn't realize that, which is phenomenal to me, you know, that you would adopt some legislation and not realize that that's the case, particularly when you don't have a framework in place for it. It's very frustrating to the county that we weren't consulted during the drafting of this, because we could have said, okay, you need to fix this to make it work. We could have postponed the implementation of it so that we could have the framework to establish it. You know, and also with all the other comp plan things. It's just, it's very frustrating to Sussex County. I don't want to speak for the other counties and towns, but it seems
towns
like.
Towns are very frustrated as
yeah,
well. Here
yeah.
In
and there's other parts of it with you know, the affordable housing and how you have to calculate that. And there's no metrics for how you calculate whether you have affordable housing units in your town and whether that retroactively applies to existing housing or is only future housing. There's a lot of you know, just uncertainty about how to implement this.
And the burden of coming up with the 20% affordable housing is on the localities, the municipalities. It's not on the private developers at all. They don't actually have a direct mandate in this bill at all.
No.
The mandate falls on us with no tools to actually implement that.
Yeah, and there's no way for us, I mean, we're getting into that part of it, but there's no way for us as Sussex County, probably the towns are the same way, to adequately determine what our affordable housing stock is currently. Because I don't even think the Delaware State Housing Authority, I mean, there's data, but that's not specific to say what the rents are for every unit in Sussex County. I mean, there's manufactured home parks. Okay, let's just, for the sake of argument, say, well, that's probably affordable, but we don't know that. We don't know whether that's a primary residence. We don't know what the owner's or tenant's income level is to make sure it qualifies for the affordable housing rates. You know, I there's just so many questions about how to implement this.
Yeah, I imagine some of the mobile home communities, there are probably people paying combined rent and mortgage of $3,000 a month. I doubt we consider that affordable, right?
But to your point, how in the world does Sussex County know that?
We don't
have any way. We're not going to go, you know, door to door. So how much do you make and how much do you pay? You know, I mean, that's almost what you're compelled to do under SB 23. So one of the things we're hoping is that, you know, folks in Dover see the light and maybe, you know, I can't necessarily hope for this being retracted, but, you know, roll back some of the
modified something
because it really just creates a lot of problems in terms of just how to implement it. The other thing that we have said is that we're going to be faced with a room full of folks, and the blame is going to be put on Sussex County for approving all this when realistically Dover said, you don't have any say in it, you got to approve this stuff, you know, so.
That's what people don't understand, and I can't believe people haven't been going straight up the ladder with their complaints.
Is part of the issue that the other counties may have stronger codes that are maybe more restrictive than ours, and the legislature is completely unaware that we are not?
I can't speak to that. I mean, Kent County generally has you know, different zoning than we do in terms of what's permitted, the number of units per acre, that sort of thing, in some parts. And of course, Newcastle County, except for Southern Newcastle County, is largely already developed. You know, I mean, so the brunt of this is going to be borne by Sussex County. You know, that's where the growth's happening in the state. And now, as we said in here, you know, it's just interesting to me that we get accused so much of you know, overdevelopment and approving things. This supercharges development in Sussex County. You know, I mean, and all over Sussex County, not just in the level one and two areas. You know, this is everywhere in Sussex County.
And the state agencies are going to continue to print out green lights for everything, right? All the agency inputs are going to continue to provide weak sauce, saying things are fine.
Yeah. Well,
I would imagine they're taking the same brunt.
Well,
I
don't want to speak for the state agencies, you know, in detail, but it doesn't sound like there was necessarily coordination with them on how this is implemented as well, you know. And, I mean, like, for example, Delta, how are we figured out? They'll still comment on subdivisions, you know. It's how we take it and who gets to talk about that. But, like, with our future land use map now, we were in a meeting with Delta dealing with the Route 9 study, for example, you know. And so that DelDOT now is master planning Route 9 from Cool Spring, essentially to Georgetown, really, but more on the, I guess, the eastern end of it, from Gravel Hill to Cool Spring. And they're going parcel by parcel and looking at what exact road improvements they need to do and how the development's going to occur in that area. And that's, they've engaged Jamie's office as well. And I said to them in the meeting, I'm like, and they're overwhelmed with that. They're like, you know, they've got consultants and they're burning through consultant contracts on that. Like, this is great, folks, but you realize now you've got to do this for all of Sussex County for our future land use map. If that's now a zoning map, which is what it effectively is going to be with our comp plan, we need to know today what those road capacities are and what your improvements are going to be, because depending on what you're going to do there is going to tell us whether we're going to upzone that property or not with our future land use map, because there's not going to be a public hearing down the line. We need to know that future land use map stage, because once that happens, the rezoning occurs, you know, right afterwards.
Do you think they're going to be able to have that information ready for us before we submit our
comp plan? I'm skeptical of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I don't know that they realized what burden this puts on them. You know, any of the state, Denrec too, you know? I mean, so, yeah.
How long can we wait on this? Is there something that we're going to run up against here?
Well, no, we're working on it. I mean, yeah. there's not a deadline to implement it because we've got to, you know, we can't drag our feet and we're not. You know, but there's not a thou shalt have this process in place by a certain date. But we know SB 23 is there, so we're working forward to figure out how it's going to happen, you know. And, you know, if the legislation changes, you know, then we'll adapt accordingly. But right now we've got to live with this. So
I'm just trying to figure out, you know, from the state side, the enforcers, if you will, who's going to come down and say, this is it. We've, you know, we put this in and you know, here we've been a month and a half, but, you know, I don't know. I didn't know how that would work.
Well, we've told everybody and we told a set of council and it's been reported it's not a month and a half. This is, you know, probably into 2027 to get this done by the time we draft it and advertise it, run through the public hearings and everything. It's probably not going to be the state. I mean, we'll get pressure on that. What we're going to hear from is from all the applicants that can say, I want my subdivision now, you know.
Yeah. So the lawsuits are going to start.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, well, I'll talk about it later during executive session. But, yeah, I mean, it just affects so many different things. Just even, like, if we have somebody that comes in and wants to do a re-subdivision, a redesign of their subdivision, ordinarily that would be a public hearing. We're like, well, you know, now I don't even. It comes through Jamie's office, and you know it shows up here, and that's it. So, it's yeah.
I'm sure there's so many other things that you haven't even, no one's even given any consideration that it's going to pop up and then go, oh wait.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and you know the other thing is too is that going back to the future land use map, you know currently under the way our current comprehensive plan and future land use map works and the way we were anticipating our new comprehensive plan and future land use map works, you know, in the future, in the upcoming plan and map, it was the county's intention to give much better guidance and predictability to rezoning. You know, it wouldn't be a zoning map, but it would give a developer a clear roadmap, like, all right, if I'm in this area, then I'm much more likely to get a rezoning to MR or GR or commercial or whatever. So there's much more predictability than we have now, because that's fair to the developers, the public, and you all. Right now, though, you know, that's just out the window. So two things really happen. Like if the future land use map says that this property shall be upzoned to MR or GR, which is effectively what we've got to do on our future land use map, there's not a public hearing then for that upzoning to MR, GR. And then when somebody goes to subdivide it, there's also not a public hearing on that. So it really just pulls the public hearings out of that whole process once we get the future land use map and comp plan done. It, you know, so the other thing that's frustrating on it, and again, more comp plan related, is that currently in state code, you know, we develop our comp plan and our future land use map, and if the cabinet committee and off-state planning coordination or the governor don't like it, you know, there's a negotiation that occurs and we try to work it out. That language is deleted under SB 23, so they hold the cards, they approve it or not, you know.
Yeah.
It'll be up to Sussex County whether we say, fine, whatever, we're moving forward with our comp plan, but right now they hold the cards on whether to approve it or not.
Yeah, I think there's been a lot of manipulation using kind of a, you know, anti-NIMBY protest sentiment. I can't think of one scenario where I've seen something that we stopped because of NIMBY. That was affordable housing.
Right, right.
That might be true in other parts of Delaware, but that's not the case here.
Right.
So.
And quite honestly, you know, I hear, I don't know if you all do, you know, concerns about the timing of getting things through our agenda.
Yeah.
And whenever I have an opportunity to tell anybody about that, I'm like, well, I don't know how to improve that because there's only five of you all that has to consider all this information. There's only so much staff that has to consider all this information. You can speed it up all you want or try to, but there's not the bandwidth to do it. You know, we only have so many public hearings. If we eliminate the public hearings, I don't see that going away because there's still only so much staff that has to happen, you know, that can process this stuff through. And if there's, you know, a whole lot of applications coming through because there's not a public hearing, it's still going to be in line with you all trying to process that information.
Right. And I take exception to anybody saying that anyways with the workload that the staff already has on them.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous, and for anybody to even suggest that they're not doing their job quickly enough is.
And I don't know, because there's not a public hearing, so, you know, like, sort of behind the scenes, when you have a public hearing, there's back and forth with staff. There's red lines on drawings, you know, there's a comment letter, mm-hmm. you know, but there's a public hearing ultimately that happens where there's sort of a cutoff date, right? Like now, does that go on forever? And, you know, is staff going to submit red line drawings back to an applicant? They're going to submit drawings back to staff, and it just keeps bouncing back and forth because there's no sort of last step in the process now. It just leaves so much up in the air.
Right. So. And that might work against them.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. So it's a strange new world we're in that we've got to sort of figure out. You know, the other thing is, unless something really changes and it's taken up in a special session, I don't think the legislature's back in session until January. So, you know, it's not going to necessarily get changed quickly. But we're going to be working through this in the meantime.
Yeah.
But I don't see us having our new process in place until probably around then anyway.
Wow.
It's a lot. I felt it was important. I know Todd did and Jamie did as well. Since the rubber meets the road with you all, that it's council should hear this because they've got to deal with it as well. But you all needed to sort of hear it from us with our concerns and frustrations with it as well. So.
Well, I think I speak on behalf of everyone. Thank you for all the work that you're doing with it, with staff and everyone else, because I just can't even imagine how this is going to end up and what it's going to take to get it through. But we appreciate you and keeping all of us informed of what you do know.
Yeah, no, we'll continue to do that. So that's all I have on that one. So the next thing, unless you have any other comments on that, is executive session. So we need just a motion to go into executive session and a second and a vote.
So moved. Second.
Okay, motion.